generally my nervous system was just in like hyper arousal, and so I would just constantly go back and forth between intense panic, exhaustion, nausea, dizzy. It just left me feeling extremely defeated and desperate. My symptoms flare up when I do things that I don't want to do, and not so much when I exert myself.
And how was it for you when you eventually realized that you could release emotions and symptoms?
It gave me a huge sense of like, oh my God, I want to tell everybody. I want to, you know, shout this into the world. We come back to points that feel like we've fallen back into old things, or we're back to zero, or this is something that we thought we had already processed. And this image of the spiral is really something that I bring to my mind often, that maybe we are on a similar spot, but we're one level up. And now you've got to fight for your health, and it's deemed something good to fight for your health, but it was so detrimental to me, and I had to really drop the fight.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. And I'm here today for another interview, and today with T. Welcome, T.
Hello.
And is your name really T, or is it just a nickname?
Well, I guess you can say it's a nickname, but I think about myself as T. Everybody calls me T. It's just a bit tricky to explain to people that it's just one letter. Doesn't satisfy people usually.
Okay. And how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good today. I had a nice day, which is refreshing.
Hey, and your health didn't always used to be great, right? So could you tell me a little bit about what your health problems were?
You know, where to start? I think I would say that I started having some form of chronic symptoms since I was 16. I think I had like emotional symptoms for a long time, and then the physical symptoms that felt chronified started when I was around 16. I started having migraines from one day to the other when I was 18, 19. And then through my 20s, I had migraines fairly regularly, went on all medications available at the time. Nothing really changed much of that. And then when I got into my 30s, I started having just an intensification in my acute work-related stress, some of it related to me migrating to Australia and being under pressure around visa and, you know, not being familiar with this culture and the structures and systems that I was operating in. And I was like really grinding myself into the ground in those years. And I wasn't far from the ground before these years. And I just dug myself in like deeper and deeper into the ground. And then 2.5 years ago, I had severe lower back pain. That lasted for many, many months and is still kind of ongoing. And I could feel that my body was just like barely holding it together. And I kept working and grinding because it didn't feel like I had any choice. And then I had an infection in July last year, so 15 months ago or something. I tested positive for COVID in that time, and the infection itself was not that bad. I just noticed that my nervous system was in complete overwhelm. That was mostly what I noticed, besides other minor symptoms. And after a couple of weeks, when I thought I was recovering, I just crashed and couldn't leave the bed for 3 months, and was kind of bracing myself for just being one of those bedbound, disabled people that never get better. And in somewhat, it somewhat felt like a confirmation of my life's struggle. I was like, okay, here we go. I've fought my whole life. I've tried to be recognized in my suffering my whole life and have a confirmation that life is pain. And here I am. I have ultimate confirmation. I'm now bedbound and everything is, you know, literally falling apart. Maybe someone is now going to recognize my suffering, which no one did. But yeah.
Wow. And sorry, you said a lot already, but what kind of symptoms? How was it to be in bed? What did you feel?
Generally, my nervous system was just in like hyper arousal. I was just extremely anxious and tense and nervous. And what kept me in bed was more, you know, POTS related symptoms. I never got a POTS diagnosis. I didn't really want it. But I would get like really dizzy, and I've tried to explain this from the start, and the only way I can explain it is that it feels like my blood from one second to the other, my blood went like sour, you know, like when you have milk and then from one day to the other, it switches into sour and it's off. And like my blood felt like that. If I would move a little bit, if I would be too activated in like conversation or through music or sounds or anything, it really felt like my blood would go sour and my limbs would get really, really heavy. And my heart rate was really elevated that whole time. It still is a little bit. And that would send me into a panic. And so I would just constantly go back and forth between intense panic, exhaustion, just having these nauseous, dizzy, achy, just off feeling limbs. And I had a sore throat for many months. I had a tinnitus that visited me every day. It was never like constant. It just came every day. My sleep was extremely disturbed. It's still not great, but it's much better. And I just overall just had like no window of tolerance for anything. Like my partner walking past the room and like me not expecting footsteps would just send me into a panic attack straight away. That was mostly the symptoms. Oh, and chest pains, just ongoing chest pains contributing to the fear.
Wow. And I mean, how did you react on that? Like suddenly you were in another country feeling like this. What did you think?
It was extremely challenging because it really felt like I lost the majority of things that made up my life up until that point. I lost both access to the thing that resourced me, like dancing, moving, being outdoors, spending time with people, music, all those things that were really always very resourceful to me. And, you know, I lost my jobs. I got sick in my partner's house and I didn't leave my partner's house like for a very long time. And I was all of a sudden in a position of like complete dependence on someone. And I had lived a rather hyper-independent life before then. And it just left me feeling extremely defeated and desperate. And like I said, it felt like, yeah, of course this has to happen to me because I'm so unlucky. I've been unlucky my whole life. Everything has been a struggle. And yeah, this just makes sense. My life is just kind of, I don't know, doomed. And this is This is just the culmination of it. This is the climax of it.
Wow. And how did your partner react to this?
Oh, he did what he could. It was extremely challenging for him too, to have a nursing case in his house from one day to the other. He had also lived a fairly hyper-independent life. We didn't even live in the same city. He had been living by himself and really enjoyed that. And all of a sudden, I was there needing support with everything, needing to be fed 9 times a day, needing him to refill my water bottle, you know, all the things, everything. He really tried his best. But I think it was, it was extremely challenging for him too. He just went straight into survival mode from there, because he had to keep, he had to keep the ship going, and look after me full time.
And what kind of treatments did you try at first?
Honestly, not that many. I was very, very lucky that one of my closest friends had been through a post-COVID phase of being bedbound for 18 months. And so I had someone with experience who had already found access to nervous system work, somatic work, parts work, brain retraining. And I had already seen a somatic experiencing practitioner 2 years prior to me getting sick. So I already had access to, this, call it alternative world of, approaches, the mind-body approach, that whole category of treatments. And so from the beginning, to me, it didn't feel like there was anything to gain from getting myself into the mainstream system or into a long COVID clinic or whatever. I had one saline infusion that felt really good. And I took beta blockers when I really needed to. But overall, I think from the start, I felt like either there's nothing that's going to help me, there is no modality that I'm going to trust within the medical system. And so I just followed my somatic experiencing practitioner's guidance and my friend's expertise, which was mostly breathing and humming and, basic vagus nerve kind of stuff. I tried lots of supplements, obviously. Lots of supplements, can't even remember, but I didn't have a lot of money at that time. So I also couldn't spend that much on treatments like that. And I think as soon as I had realized that I might not have to be bedbound for the rest of my life, that's when I already came across your program fairly early on. So I think I was really lucky in that regard, because knowing me and where I came from, I could have stayed bedbound for a very, very long time if I hadn't had access to these resources already. So it was just 3 months.
That's fairly fast. Hey, and in the beginning, before we started recording, you mentioned mold. What did you think of that?
When I talked to my naturopath, she was one of the first contacts that I kind of had. Because I did want to support my system when I was still fighting the infection. And then I talked to her again 2 weeks later, and she was surprised that I hadn't fully recovered yet and kind of was going through factors in my life that could contribute and came to the mold in the house that I lived in. And it really freaked me out, honestly, because I think she is very scared of mold. And she just told me, you have to move out of that house immediately, even if it's just a tent. You just have to get out of this house tonight. You're never going to recover if you stay in a house full of mold. And it was very clear to me that I could not leave that house that night. It was not an option. It was not an option to move anywhere else. It was not an option for my partner to move anywhere else. And so for 2 days, I felt like, oh, shit, maybe it is the mold. Maybe it is the mold. But it didn't feel like it was the problem. It really didn't feel like it was the problem. So I think something in me decided not to be scared of the mold, because I couldn't afford that at the time. I definitely had other symptoms because I heard about that being a common effect of, you know, a COVID infection. Like for a long time, I thought I couldn't eat gluten anymore. And it wasn't the gluten actually. So I was also lucky that I didn't struggle with major intolerances besides what I thought was gluten intolerance, but it wasn't. Yeah.
Okay. And thank you. And could you share a little bit about your healing journey from that moment on and what the role of the release program was for you?
So I think there was a few steps that really started to get me on a path that then brought me to the release program and other things. That really came from some fundamental, like light switch kind of moments. And one was when I was still bedbound and accepting that I was, well, not accepting, but feeling like this is my life now. I came across an interview, I think on the YouTube channel called Positively COVID, which I got a lot of useful things from, with a practitioner of the lightning process. And I'm aware that you know of the lightning process, and all my alarm bells kind of went on when I heard about it. I was like, nah, this doesn't feel right to me. But this practitioner talked about journaling about things that we want. And I had so much resistance in myself to that because I was like, all I want right now is for my life to end pretty much because this is shit. And my life has always been shit. So why would it ever get any better? But I did it nonetheless. I tried to write down just 5 things. And within like 20 minutes, I had written like 10 pages about things that I want that I wasn't even aware of. And that changed something in me. I felt like, oh, maybe there is something that I want in this life. and then I think gradually for the next few weeks or months, probably, I started to realize that I had kind of resented being alive since I can remember. I remember that I told my parents furiously that I hate them for forcing me to be alive and me not having a say in that, that I never had a choice whether I want to be alive or not. And I think I've fought for that all my life. And then my life got me to a point where I could choose whether I just wanted to continue like a really bleak, depressed, painful life, or I could take this as an opportunity to actively choose life over not life, because I was in a point where I was not living, you know, being bedbound. I'm sure you and others can relate. It's not really a life at all. It's like, and so I really started to feel like, oh, maybe this is my opportunity to choose life over not life. And then I just like, all the doors opened in the sense that I knew what I was kind of looking for and what I could be open to. And so when I came across your program, I think on some podcast, or maybe I just Googled around desperately, and I had an openness to it that I didn't have before. Because I don't think I could have believed that recovery is possible, because it would not have fit my narrative that everything is shit, basically, and that there is no way out of shit. And, you know, the lightning process, I looked into it fairly in a lot of detail. I listened to your little video about it, and I decided that it was not my thing, and it just did not resonate with the part of me that had already been doing somatic work and didn't want to gaslight myself, basically. And your program then kind of seemed to offer a more like wide range of things. I was looking at Primal Trust too, but I couldn't afford that at the time. And I joined your program when it was still donation-based. And the fact that it was donation-based gave me a lot of trust. And I think I needed that trust at that time to give it a try.
And how did things go from there?
I got quite into the program, as in, like, I wanted to do it really fast. I wanted to do it really good, like I had tried to do my life. And there were lots of little moments, and I really enjoyed that, where I felt like, you know, I entered the next unit. Are they called units? What are they called?
I like units. Let's keep it with units.
Modules? Modules. I started a new module, and there was a video where you were talking about the exact thing that I had just like come across. And it was like, oh, perfectionism. Oh, yeah, being efficient, all this. And that really worked for me. It was like nice kind of synchronicities, I guess, and also just you being very able to relate to the progress and the process that people go through, which was extremely comforting and helpful to me. And I also started seeing a specialized personal trainer who gave me a movement plan. So I kind of had that. It's not really graded exercise, but in a way, you know, it's a very, very, very slow build up that also helped me tremendously. And I think I went just through a lot of the stages that you described in one of your documents. And I really often got triggered. I got triggered by a lot of the things that you said, some of the videos that you had linked in the program. I got really triggered and had a lot of resistance come up. But I think I gained a lot from exactly those. surprise. I'm not a person who would say that like triggers are necessarily like gifts or opportunities or always. I don't really agree with that. But when they fall onto a nervous system that can hold its basic shape, then they can be really great opportunities. And I came across a few of those in the program. And one step that felt really big to me was, you might remember, when you decided to put the program behind a paywall and stop it being donation-based, I got so angry, and I felt like, oh shit, this is another confirmation. Like, I wasn't angry at you. I just felt angry at the world, at life, that this thing that I just found that feels good now gets taken away from me again. Like, I just felt that made me fall back into my really old pattern, which I still carry around with me, you know? And I felt like, fuck, I've lost this good thing. Good things are just not meant to stay with me. And I decided to do something differently, and I reached out to you. And we found a way that I could stay in the program and not be financially ruined. And that was a very healing experience, you know? Things like that. So I feel like, in a way, some of the maybe the key components of the program that really have a huge effect on people who aren't in that work already, some of those I didn't even need that much, because, you know, I had been doing somatic work, I had been doing meditations, affirmations, and all of that. There was just something about the structure of the program, the way you run it, and the little triggers that were in there for me that were extremely supportive to my overall progress. And I think it's also to do just with like the way that you presented yourself, and that, you know, the program just seemed really, really genuine to me. And so I trusted you, and trusting someone who is a living example of recovery, you know, transformation of symptoms, whatever you want to call it, that in itself was extremely helpful to me.
Thank you. And how was it for you when you eventually realized that you could release emotions and symptoms?
Oh, I mean, it's pretty massive. Like, it's a pretty massive thing to realize that it gave me a sense of agency. It gave me a great sense of hope. It gave me a huge sense of like, oh my God, I want to tell everybody. I want to, you know, shout this into the world. This is fantastic. And then obviously there's also moments where you're like, oh fuck, I don't want to have to do this. Like, it seems like other people are just living a life, you know, and I'm here processing, releasing, feeling and moving my emotions like every second of the day. But yeah, didn't feel like an option, yeah. Because I guess the reward felt too great, you know. It's like, nah, this is what I'm doing now, and I can see the impact of it, and there's no way back to the life that I used to have and that so many people have.
Yeah, I must say, personally, I've also been in a phase where I was really fed up with releasing. I didn't want to do it anymore, but then the symptoms were so strong, so I had to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was also a phase where I was really fed up, and then I think I realized that in a way, this choice that I made now to live just also means, you know, obviously that I have to question a lot of the ways that I used to live, or look at life, or look at what it is that humans do in this life. And it just started to feel more and more wrong to see how other people live their lives in a way. Felt very, very alienated at times. And I was like, I really don't know how to ever get back into the world that feels so foreign to me. But I also couldn't go back to the world that I used to have. It was a really stuck place there. And I think I'm still in that a little bit. And now I forgot my point, so you can ask another question.
Okay. What else did need to fall in place for you?
I think I was still, and I might still be, in a process of, you know, that maybe might go on for the rest of my life, of just losing things that aren't really for me. Had to lose a few friendships and feel extremely lonely, and I guess that had to fall into place. I had to lose relationships of all sorts. I had to find acceptance. I had to grieve a lot. That all fell straight into my life. And I think going back to Germany a few months ago, that was also necessary, because I think I had gotten quite comfortable in a place here where I was pretty, pretty wobbly, you know, and where I could only do very limited things. And then going on this trip that I really wanted to go on, and getting to Germany and realizing, oh, wow, my health is more stable than I thought, was a really important experience. It didn't really feel like I could go. It didn't really feel like I would be able to go to Germany. But when I was there, my health kind of like just like jumped up a step. because it was in a new environment, and it was also a familiar environment to some extent, but also just new. And that was really, really helpful. And what it showed me was that my symptoms flare up when I do things that I don't want to do, not so much when I exert myself. I can exert myself in things that feel good or important to me, and my symptoms wouldn't flare up. I could do it, the tiniest thing that I don't want to do. Like, I'll give you an example. I would go to a 6-hour dance workshop and feel like, oh, this is a big exertion, you know, I might have to rest the next day. And I felt completely fine because I really wanted to dance. And if my partner said he's going to work in the garden, and I felt like, oh, maybe I should also work in the garden, within 2 minutes, I would have symptoms come on and show me like, we don't actually want to do this. And so learning to set these boundaries in those moments, and find gratitude for my symptoms being very clear indicators of what things I like and what things I don't want to do, which was sometimes surprising. I had to learn that. That was really important, yeah. And then still to find ways to live in a world where I can't always choose what I want to do.
Yeah. And doing things that you don't want to do usually invokes anger. And when anger is stuck in your body, perceived as a danger, then, you know, you can get some symptoms. Mm-hmm. Did this, but sometimes it also works for other emotions, like fear, for example. Mm-hmm. So you could do something with being afraid of a certain outcome, and then you get symptoms. Did you also had those kind of symptoms?
Yeah, I guess sometimes. Too much joy also brought on symptoms sometimes because it's very unfamiliar.
Wow.
And yeah, things that I was, just doing really, really good things and realizing, oh yeah, you know, the traumatized nervous system is so much more familiar with feeling pain, struggle, fear, anger, as challenging as all these things are, and we have to make those safe. But for a traumatized nervous system, feeling goodness, feeling lightness, feeling ease and joy and pleasure is even more unfamiliar. So I really had to slowly learn to make joy and goodness safe.
Wow. And how did you do that?
It started with tiny things like looking at my guinea pig and acknowledging that when I look at my guinea pig, I feel something in my body. I feel a fuzziness. I feel a spaciousness. I feel warmth, or I feel neutrality, or I feel calm or some bubbliness. And to then remember in those moments to do the somatic tools that I had learned to signal safety to my brain, you know, orient in the room, name the things that I see whilst I'm looking around in the room, feeling the boundaries of my physical body and, like, you know, touching my body and checking that everything is intact. Sometimes saying that I am safe, sometimes that also works. For me, that only works when I'm also connecting with a felt sense of safety. And I think I had to learn that I had mistaken discomfort for lack of safety for a very long time. And I guess to my nervous system, they felt the same. And to understand that safety can really only be felt in the present moment. And no one can know if we will be safe in 5 minutes, if we will be safe in 10 minutes. And as much as the mind wants to ensure that, reminding myself again and again that the safety that counts is the safety that I can feel in this very moment. And if thoughts come in that catastrophize about something that might happen in the future, that is not really a lack of safety if I can focus on sitting on my chair, having my back leaning against something, having something holding my head, and my eyes and my senses not picking up on acute threat. I had to learn that. And so I practiced that with the tiniest joyful things, and then allowed myself to do that with bigger joyful things. And I'm still practicing that most days.
Yeah, it's a journey. Hey, and could you tell me a little bit more about some releases that you had?
I had a lot of what felt like tiny little muscle releases in my shoulders and neck. Often just when I lie down for a meditation, I did all my meditations and still do all my meditations lying flat on my back, because nothing gives me more of a sense of groundedness and safety than having my back touching a surface. And often in the meditations, I would notice these little muscles release, or like little sensations running down my neck and shoulders. And I think crying is still one of my biggest forms of release of any kind. I cry very easily, and I cried so much. I think it was fairly easy for me to just create spaces where I could just express what I felt. And sometimes maybe that can just be a form of release, to just freely express. And I remember one particular meditation, it might even have been the worst case scenario meditation, where I imagined that the worst case scenario would be that I would die. And then I realized that's not actually it. In that meditation, it was the fear of just being unwell my whole life. And in that, like, I really felt something like click in my chest. And I had this thought that this is the life that my dad lived and that I watched my dad live. And it really felt like I took a lot of that struggle onto me, because it was insanely painful to watch my dad just struggle through life, and so painful for me to watch as a child. And yeah, that little click in my chest combined with this thought just like made me bawl my eyes out for like an hour, and I felt a lightness after that that, yeah, was quite special. That was probably the biggest kind of like most spectacular release. Otherwise, I'm a fan of slow and gentle releases.
Yeah, it's good that you say that. Yeah, thank you. Beautiful story. Hey, and do you still have symptoms every now and then?
I do. I definitely have some of the very old symptoms that started first when I was in my teenage years. They are still present. I occasionally, you know, have a little tinnitus visit me, or I have some chest pains, but I think I've come to see my symptoms just as a form of communication between my system, my body, and my mind, myself. And so I try to see them as that, which helps to not get so spooked about them. And I try to inquire, and some of the symptoms, I still don't quite understand what they're trying to communicate. So I'm still going to have to spend some time on that journey. But I think I've said this before. If I consider my symptoms, my body, my system's way of communicating with me, it would also almost be scary if there was no symptoms. Like if there was no communication, I think that would also feel kind of unrealistic to me. And, you know, I feel like everyone has symptoms because our bodies are communicating with us all the time, depending on what situation we are in and what's going on in our nervous system, and maybe what trauma we went through and what situations remind us of. So I've just come to try and welcome symptoms as much as I can, and see if I can get their message. But sometimes there's also no point trying to decipher the message, because it's just something that the brain has interpreted in a random situation, and all I can do is just welcome it and give it its place and not overthink where exactly that comes from now, what I did that caused this, what I have to change for that to go away. I think that can be really misleading, and just dig deeper into overanalyzing, fear, catastrophizing, all of that. Sometimes it's also good to just be like, oh, the body's communicating. Okay, cool. I'll listen, you know, but I don't have to act on it necessarily.
Okay, so they don't worry or bother you that much anymore?
They do sometimes. Like, it's still, as soon as I get weird chest pains, I have my thought, like my fearful thoughts, but I have a different way of relating even to those thoughts now. I can also just kindly welcome those thoughts. You know, it doesn't always work on, like, bad days. I get spooked out for a little bit, and it takes me a little bit to come back into my new patterns, I guess, that I'm still practicing every day. And, you know, migraines are not nice. I never enjoy having a migraine, but I think I've, again, dropped the fight. I'm not fighting the symptom. I'm not trying to fight my migraine, and I'm not walking around with a raging migraine feeling like, oh my God, life is punishing me. My body is punishing me, and I have to just fight through this agony. I just take the pain, and I'm unhappy with the pain, which sometimes is the best thing we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned, like, this is the way that our body communicates with us. And for, like, personally, I had so many layers of symptoms and fatigue, emotions. And after a while, every symptom was just an opportunity to release something. And so I didn't, you know, really mm-hmm. fast, go as fast as possible, like, make trigger me in a way that would make me cry. And now the symptoms are just gone. But it doesn't mean that I don't have mm-hmm. stress. And I actually miss having the symptoms, because I can miss disturbing thoughts when I'm busy, or I can miss that I'm not really relaxed because I'm when I feel stressed, but I can't miss fatigue or a migraine attack. So it's actually in a way, it was easier to release when I still had symptoms than right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And, you know, like, I still feel like these symptoms are still serving a purpose. They wouldn't be there otherwise. And I think I haven't understood the full purpose, and I'm only starting to understand how I generally benefit from having had these symptoms all my life. Like, what I've gained, and I think it's mostly, in my case, receiving care and compassion. Easiest way to get that is by being in struggle town. I guess my system has well and truly embodied that for a very long time. And so yeah, I'm sure there's still things to release. And it is sometimes harder when the symptoms are not screaming at you. It's also sometimes easier to not dive into it. But yeah, I'm also trying to accept that when that's the case, you know, and also release the desire to release everything in a way.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Hey, is there anything that you would like to share for someone who is in your position, like the way that you were a few years ago, having long COVID, struggling? Is there any advice that you would like to give?
You know, nothing that hasn't been said before that I haven't gotten from other teachers or people that I've come across on this journey. But I think for me, the thing that I have to remind myself of the most is, you know, the spiral nature of healing or recovery, and that we come back to points that feel like we've fallen back into old things, or we're back to zero, or this is something that we thought we had already processed. And this image of the spiral is really something that I bring to my mind often, that maybe we are on a similar spot, but we're one level up and not back down to zero. And that reminder has been really important to me. And also I remind myself again and again, and that was one of the biggest moments of change, was really acceptance, like understanding in a felt sense the difference between acceptance and resignation. And I think I was very resigned for a long time, and I had to learn that acceptance has a different quality, and that resignation comes from a place of constriction, whilst acceptance has an expansion and openness to it. And whenever I really manage to accept my situation, as fucked up as it is, and as much as I want a different direction, but the moment I find little sparks of peace with what is right now, assuming that it might always stay that way, the biggest things happened pretty much instantly. Whenever I tapped into that moment of acceptance, something in my life changed. So yeah, the acceptance to me really feels like a key piece, and to drop the fight, because I'm sure a lot of people can relate to just living in, like, in a life that feels like you got to fight for everything, fight against everything. And now you got to fight for your health, and it seems something good to fight for your health, but it was so detrimental to me, and I had to really drop the fight, for my system to have space to actually rest and start doing its own recovery, its own healing. So yeah, the spiral and acceptance were really crucial to me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this interview, T. I loved it. I love hearing you. I love hearing your stories.
That was nice. Yeah, thanks for the chat.
Thanks everyone for watching. And please like and subscribe, and give yourself a big hug. Bye.
Bye-bye.